what kinds of grades did you get in high school? Did you get straight A's? Were you a C student? Did you ever fail a course? How did that feel? Do grades accurately reflect how much a student has learned? We are going to talk with a guest who says it's time to reconsider giving letter grades in school, and we will wonder if you agree or not. I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network. We'll welcome your questions, your thoughts, your experiences on the value or lack thereof of giving students A's and B's and C's and worse. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Let me welcome our guest. Ashley Lam Sinclair is a high school instructional coach. She is the founder and CEO of Curio Learning. She recently wrote a piece for The Atlantic, Why Grades Are Not Paramount to Achievement. And we have posted that piece on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks very much for being with us. So talk some about how you you experimented with this idea of not giving sophomores in your English classes any grades for 6 weeks. First, why did you decide to experiment like this?
Well, so my colleagues and I over the summer, during some professional development, came across some research about feedback and authentic, effective student feedback. And one of the things that we found was that when students are given feedback on an assignment, for us as English teachers, that might be an essay or a piece of writing, if it is attached to a numerical or a letter grade, the students often do not even read or absorb the feedback that's given. Instead, they focus 100% on the grade. So for us as English teachers, it's a constant battle of, you know, if we have a stack of 150 essays, why are we spending the time writing on them if it's not really showing improvement in student writing? So we kind of wanted to put the research to practice, and that's how we came up with the idea of starting the school year, particularly a time when you want things to be really about, you know, developing good relationships with the students and creating a positive atmosphere for learning. So that's when we came up with the idea of using that time at the beginning of the year to capitalize on some of that research.
Uh-huh. Well, I get it. So you have all these comments saying, you know, you should be clearer here, or, you know, grammatical error there or something like that. And the students are just ignoring that and just settling for, hey, I got a B, or being bummed out that they got a D.
Exactly. Yeah.
So, so you're saying, though, that they need that feedback to get better? I mean, can't they just realize that, hey, I got a B, so I need to work harder the next time if I want an A?
Well, I mean, yeah, in an ideal world, that's what would happen. But, you know, in our context last year, I've switched schools since then, but in the school where I taught last year, it was highly academic. And so there's a lot of pressure from the community, from parents, from peers to peers, to really thrive academically. So, you know, a lot of times the focus just became, you know, getting that grade in order to be able to say, I got the grade, and not so much getting the grade for the process of learning. Mm-hmm. It was more about, you know, having it as, you know, to improve GPA. Than it was anything else.
So what did you write on? You just wrote the feedback on your students' papers and nothing else?
Oh, no. We did lots of things. I mean, we conferenced with students. We had students conference with each other. We worked in the process of writing, you know, so you would write, you know, for example, a thesis statement first, spend some time on that. Focus on then the introductory paragraph, so on and so forth. And I'm just speaking with essays here. There are lots of other, you know, projects and things that we did. So throughout the process, we give feedback. But for us, you know, the question, especially in our context, which was very traditional, we had a lot of parents who would expect, you know, that writing would come home with, or, you know, that student writing would come home with our comments all over it. And so what happened is that we kind of just realized that we were doing things for the sake of doing them just because they had always been done that way. So we wanted to stop, hit the brakes, and really talk about what is the process for learning to write and read and speak and listen as we teach in English. What is really that process, and how do we get all parties involved, our students and our parents, to engage in that process? That was kind of the heart of what we were trying to do. Yeah. So although we were always doing all parts of that process, we just found that the outcome was the priority for our students and parents. And so we kind of wanted to shift their thinking on that.
No, I get it. But I'm thinking, as someone who always got a grade on the top of my paper, you wouldn't write anything. You wouldn't write pretty good, but work harder next time or something like that. You just had the feedback there along with all the other instruction, you know, elsewhere, but you didn't put any kind of evaluation on the term paper, for example.
Right. No, I mean, we would. I mean, we would say, you know, we would definitely evaluate along with the letter grade or the number grade if it was a matter of point, if it was a different assignment than an essay, for example. Yeah, we definitely offered evaluation. I mean, we have rubrics. So an A, you know, would equate to certain, you know, guideposts on the rubrics or mileposts, so to speak, that the students would have achieved if they received an A. So they would know, this is why I've received the A, or this is what I need to keep doing to get to the next level. But again, what we found is that the students just weren't necessarily looking at those things. They were more focused on the point.
I see. So what was your conclusion from your experiment then?
So we set it up. We got permission from our principal. We talked to him about our reasoning. Everybody on the team was on board, all of the sophomore English teachers. We sent information home to parents. We had an open house night where we fielded questions about it. So we kind of laid the ground. And, of course, we told the students who were pretty excited about the idea. Of course, then you have some honor students who weren't. But during the 6-week time period where we implemented this, what we saw was an increased level of motivation and engagement in our classrooms, particularly around things like class discussion or, you know, in, like I mentioned, the thesis statement. So in process writing that, or in process assignments, even that in the past we would have had to either skip or a lot more point value than what we would have necessarily done in order to increase that motivation. So we just noticed a lot more engagement and intrinsic motivation from the students, especially, like I said, with like class discussions. You know, from the teacher perspective, there are a lot of things that contribute to real learning that don't easily become quantified for a grade. So a class discussion is a really important part of the learning process in English. But, you know, I've struggled with this for 12 years as an educator. How do you assign a grade for a discussion? Especially you've got students who are introverted. You've got, you know, all mm-hmm. kinds of situations in a classroom that make quantifying a class discussion difficult. So the question then becomes, do we engage in these class discussions and not give grades? Do we get engaged in the class discussion and give the grade? What are going to be the questions from the students about what is this worth? Why am I doing this? And from the parents, well, what happened during this day? You know, why are there no grades for this time period? So on and so forth. So we noticed a lot of engagement. And then for us as teachers, we were able to allot more time for things that really matter in the classroom for that real learning process.
You mentioned that the honor students were not excited by this experiment. Why not?
Well, some weren't. And just typically you see, from my experience, you know, I would often see honor students who have kind of their game with the system. You know, they've bought in. They because it's working for them usually. You know, they do well in school. So when you change the narrative for them, or when you change the situation, they don't always like it. And, you know, that's just been my experience. And I know it's the experience of many of my colleagues who work with honor students as well. For the other side of it, I also taught at the same time collaborative classes, which were a mixed group of regular ed students and then special ed students. And for them, it was a revelation.
Yeah.
You know, oh, wait, like I get to do things in school and not feel terrible about it. So that was a nice shift as well.
We're gonna check news from NPR and Wisconsin Public Radio, and then we'll continue talking about whether we should rethink the letter grading process. What do you think? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. You're listening to the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. We are talking with a guest about grades, the grades that we traditionally give in school or get in school. America's academic grading system commonly takes on the form of 5-letter grades, A, B, C, D, and F. We are talking with a guest who says that this grading system can have some negative effects on students. And she wrote a piece for The Atlantic titled, Why Grades Are Not Paramount to Achievement. And we're wondering what you think and whether you think it's time we reconsider the grading system in school. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Our guest is Ashley Lamb Sinclair, a high school instructional coach, founder and CEO of Curio Learning. And this has to be my my favorite comment so far on Facebook. We have John on Facebook who says, I wrote a term paper on this very subject in 11th grade, making what I thought were pretty well-reasoned arguments against the standard A through F grading system. My points focused on how the system rewarded rote learning and test-taking skill versus imagination and creativity. I got a B-. I guess I was way ahead of my time. So, Ashley, was John, based on what we know about the grading system and what research shows, was John right there that the standard A through F grading system rewards rote learning and test-taking skills?
Well, I can't speak for all the research, but I can speak for my own classroom, and I certainly, you know, see a lot of evidence to point that John is correct. For example, I also teach a creative writing class, and I always struggle every year with, you know, how do I grade creative writing? You know, when a student writes a poem and pours his or her heart into a poem or into a piece of fiction, how do I then turn around and give that a grade? So, you know, I do agree, that grading more imaginative thought, and creative thought is definitely very difficult. And, you know, it is easier to grade, a multiple choice assessment. That's why many assessments are multiple choice still to this day. Even though, you know, we've seen time and time again that that's not always a great indicator of actual learning. So sometimes what is easily quantified is not necessarily what's best.
Yeah. You know, I just thought of something. When I was in seventh grade art class, I was 12, 13 years old, and I loved art. I really did. And I got a B. And it was devastating. It was devastating to get a B. And I thought to myself, how can, you know, our teacher so-and-so decide that, you know, my art is above average but not excellent? And or why would you give somebody a C or a D in art? How can you even grade something like that?
Right. And actually, in the piece, I talk about, you know, there is research that indicates that many students, for many particularly secondary students, that their self-esteem is directly tied to grades. And you know, so you have to think about that, that we're putting so much energy into this academic component of grading that we don't necessarily think about, you know, the social and emotional impacts of it.
Yeah, and actually it was something that I can't say that's why I didn't become a famous artist, but I didn't really pursue art with the passion that I had, in part because I thought I wasn't excellent at it.
Right, right. Well, and you know, the other side of that too is feeling, because of grades, there's, just as in my creative writing class, I often struggle with how do you grade creativity, and the impact that that could have socially and emotionally. But then on the other side, it's also a pressure to give students higher grades than maybe necessarily they deserve. You know, in the piece, I also give an anecdote of my own experience of the one time that I failed a class growing up. And I deserved to fail it. I had no business taking it. I should have failed it. And honestly, that F has propelled me in ways, you know, to be more self-aware and to take classes and to pursue passions that really matter to me. So at the same time that, you know, a negative grade can harm us, it can also propel us if we recognize that it was valid. And, you know, in your case, you were confused. And that's where that feedback comes in that I was talking about before, that, you know, maybe along the way, your teacher did express, you know, some reasoning, mm-hmm. or some feedback, you know, related to what you were doing in art class. But because the research indicates that students only see the B or the point evaluation, they don't always absorb that feedback. So it kind of, it goes both ways.
Yeah, that squirrel that I carved out of wood and polished up did not really look like a squirrel, so maybe I did deserve a B. Anyway, let's take a call from Jim in Watertown. Hi, Jim.
Hi, how you doing? Thank you for taking my call.
Yeah, thanks for calling. What do you think of the grading system?
I think she's right on charge. Back in the 70s, I was a special needs student. I had dyslexia. I'll tell you, between math and science, I was good, but the other classes, I really wasn't. And the pressure of trying to make a grade, you know, get past my learning disability and keep up and make a grade based on the system that they were using to teach us, the pressure got to me, and I ended up dropping out eventually. I shut down and dropped out. I'm a construction worker. I manage a pretty big crew now. Anyways, when I started in the construction, I needed to understand the math. So I took, the pressure was off, somebody looking at me, trying to, you know, evaluate and grade me. So I was able to figure out my own system for coming up with the answers.
Thank you, Jim. So Jim did have a dyslexia and had a problem, and especially with that pressure on him to learn. And when the pressure was off, he was able to learn. A comment on that, Ashley?
Yeah, I mean, that is exactly, you know, what we saw in our classroom, that or in my classroom in particular, that when the pressure was off for the grades, that many students thrived who in the past may have struggled, because of that pressure of the grade. You know, for English, we often give a summer reading assignment. So when the students come in, it's always frustrating for me that, you know, they wouldn't do it or it would be subpar. And so we then would have to start the year, you know, with this negative, you know, just black spot on the year of this grade that we had to give. And so this year it was awesome because the student, you know, the summer reading came in, and because of our process, because of our experiment that we were doing, we gave the feedback. We told them what we thought about their work. student who didn't turn it in or who turned in something, you know, minimal, we called home, we spoke with parents about it, and we talked to the student about it. And then we all moved on, you know. So for students like your caller, it was refreshing, you know, because now I can focus on learning and I don't have to feel constantly like I'm behind.
Yeah. Jim actually said that he dropped out. But boy, right. That's and I can imagine that if you keep on getting grades that are below average and you just get frustrated and demoralized, that you think, what's the point?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. We have Sadie on Facebook who says, I loved Waldorf School kindergarten through eighth. I'm not sure what that means. She loved it, kindergarten through eighth. There were no grades. I see. So Waldorf schools, kindergarten through eighth grade, there are no grades. When I got to high school, I was more than prepared, and I soon realized that grades are no true measure of learning. So a reaction to that, Ashley?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not, because I'm a secondary teacher, I'm not 100% familiar with Waldorf, although I am somewhat familiar with it. And I know it is play-based learning. Last summer, I went to Finland and studied their education system there with other educators and in similar concept, you know, that they use. And there are schools in the U.S. that also focus on that as well, public schools. This play-based learning, this and all the research related to learning, you know, the concept of flow, you know, being fully engaged in something for the sake of it because you enjoy doing it. All the research around that indicates that it's all intrinsic. You know, it's not necessarily for something external. And so, definitely there's value to that type of learning.
We are talking with Ashley Lamb Sinclair. She's a high school instructional coach, founder and CEO of Curio Learning. She recently wrote an opinion piece for The Atlantic, which was titled, Why Grades Are Not Paramount to Achievement. And we are talking about the upside and the downside of giving letter grades. And we're wondering if you have any thoughts or questions or experiences at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. Do you think we should do away with letter grades in schools? Do you think that the letter grade A or F, is that a good way to measure accomplishment? Do you think that grades encourage high achievement, or do you think they do the opposite? 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Our guest conducted an experiment at the beginning of the last school year where for 6 weeks, she and her colleagues did not give letter grades to their English students. Instead, worked on the process and gave a lot of feedback, but did not give letter grades. And we're talking about the outcome of that experiment and why she says that we should value the process more than the product. Explain that a little bit more, Ashley, that we need to value the process more than the product.
Yeah, so, you know, this was really obvious for us, particularly in parent reaction to the whole thing. So because we were not going to be able to communicate via letter grade, which really is the product of the learning, right, hopefully, that it would be the product of actual learning, because we weren't going to be able to communicate in that way with parents over the 6 week period, I, in particular, set up certain things to do to make sure that the communication was still strong. So I created a closed Facebook page where I posted, you know, daily pictures and posts about what we were doing in the classroom. And I sent a weekly email home, things like that, to make sure that parents understood. And then if there were any individual issues, I made sure to make phone calls or to send emails daily. in fact, a good portion of my planning period was spent on correspondence with parents. And so what I kind of realized is, although in my classroom, the process for learning had never been more obvious and apparent. So whereas in the past, for example, when we were writing claims or arguments for thesis statements, I would have maybe spent one class period on that. I would have put a 10 or 15 point assignment in, you know, the grade book, and we all would have probably moved on. Although for me, the teacher, I would have continued all year to come back and say, hey, these thesis statements are not strong. But it would have been going into the void, you know, who knows who would have heard it. But in this case, during the 6-week period, I was able to stretch that lesson over 3 days because no one was asking how many points is this worth. Instead, it became about writing the best possible arguments that they could write. And we had a lot of fun. We did discussions. We did paired activities. We did kinesthetic activities. We did debate. We did lots of things that made that process really evident to the students, to us, and to parents. And while that was going on, it was great for students in the classroom. It was great for us as teachers. But I think that parents really struggled, especially when it was all over. Because during the 6-week period, that when that communication was, you know, we would get a little bit of raised eyebrows. I would have to have, you know, extra long phone calls with parents to explain what was going on, or to talk even longer about a thesis statement as opposed to what I would have had to do before if a grade were connected. Mm-hmm. But then when the 6-week period ended and we went back to grading because of the powers that be and the way the world is, and we just had to, when we went back to grading, that's when we got a lot, I particularly got a lot of outcry from parents about, well, wait a minute, you know, like, why does he not have an A, or why is this not a 100%? You said, you know, there's been no communication for 6 weeks. And for us, it was like, you know, the communication has been especially strong over the 6 weeks. So the point being is that we put such an emphasis on the process of learning, but it became very difficult to quantify and communicate that process. And so that was kind of where the problem lied as the experiment came to a close.
Was that hard for you? We have just a minute before before news. Was it hard for you to not grade the students for 6 weeks and then all of a sudden now we're grading them again?
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't hard to not grade them because I was able to do a lot more in the moment, you know, feedback. Like we would do full class feedback. How did that activity go? And we'd have a full, you know, 20-minute discussion about how that activity went, something that I never could have done before. You know, spending a full class period on a class discussion, those kinds of things were strong. I was able to write, you know, full paragraphs or full pages, explain, you know, letters to students about their work. And then when we went back to grading, it was difficult. It wasn't difficult in that, you know, we, in 12 years of teaching, this is what I've always done. So it was easy in that regard. It was difficult making the transition, particularly for parents. And some for students. But, you know, students are pretty resilient. And for them, it was like, okay, well, this has been fun, but now we're going back to the way things are.
We're going to check news from NPR and Wisconsin Public Radio, and then we'll continue talking about the letter grading system and whether or not we should rethink it. And we're welcoming your questions and your views on this at 1-800-642-1234. Or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. This is the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. We are talking with a guest about the pros and cons of giving students letter grades, A's or B's or C's or D's or F's, and wondering if there is a better way, and wondering what you think. 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Our guest says that grades are not really the most important thing when it comes to learning and achievement. We're talking about her experiment with not giving student grades. for a 6-week period, and we are welcoming your thoughts and questions about this. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. Genevieve in Milwaukee is with us. Hi, Genevieve.
Hi, good morning.
Morning.
I had two examples when I was going to college in grading. So one department, what they did is they actually had the curve grading scale, and it got to the point where a 68% was considered a C, and it was for all different teachers. And it just didn't help us learn and retain the information because they just accepted the lower and lower scores as an average. And then I had a different teacher in a different department where he let us retake our homework assignments, our tests, and our exams to bring our grade up, because he really wanted us to retain the information versus just getting a grade scale. And that really helped us actually learn the content versus just getting a score on it.
A reaction, Ashley?
Yeah, I do a lot of that retake, and there's a lot of research around that as well. That really, it's again, that goes back to what we were talking about before. If it's about the process and not the product, then why not let students retake? You know, because the goal is for them to learn.
Yeah. So what do you think would be a good alternative to letter grades? Or what do you think? Should we do away with letter grades?
Well, the thing is, the problem is that, I mean, yes, I think that we should. But I think a bigger issue is really just the structure of the school system. In order to just get rid of letter grades, there has to be a lot of policy and restructuring, I think, overall. And there also has to be a lot of, like, public change of, you know, mindset. Like I said, the biggest pushback that I got was from parents. And so I think before you just throw out the grades, there has to be a lot of rethinking the way the system is set up. Particularly, you can't just throw out the grades from a high school perspective, because that's how students get into higher education. So I understood why those parents were so frustrated, why they wanted the grades, because their expectation is that their students will go to college. And so that's what they want. So I think there has to just be a shift in public thinking. There has to be a shift in, you know, in policy, in the way schools are structured, both K-12 and higher ed.
Yeah. And but what would you, after you do that rethinking, how do you determine whether student A using a letter versus student B is the student that gets admitted to this college?
Right. Well, so there are schools that are doing that. For example, High Tech High in California uses kind of a performance-based assessment system where they have, at the end of every semester or trimester or however they structure the school year, they have a public exhibition where the entire community comes and the students put on some kind of production, be it to show their learning over the course of that time. So it could be, you know, some kind of dramatic thing, or it could be some kind of exhibition of work that they've done, be it engineering or art or English or whatever it may be. So there are places that are doing it, but there are performance-based ways of showing what you know. Think about it. When you're on the job, when you're in the workforce, you know, your performance is in the process, right? Like, mm-hmm. In the moment, if you do something wrong, you know you've done something wrong, right? You know that you need to redo something if it's subpar. Why is school not modeled after the way that the world is set up? You don't wait at the end of a particular time on your job to get an evaluation. You might get an evaluation, but you get daily feedback on the work that you're doing.
Yeah. Let's go to Cynthia in Waukesha next. Hi, Cynthia.
Hi. I just wanted to say your guest is absolutely correct. We started back in 1970, a performance-based, we called it competence-based learning at Alverno College in the south side of Milwaukee.
Mm-hmm.
And it has been worldly. People from all over the world come to study that system. Now, that was at the college level. Well, it doesn't deal with the same problems high school has, but it was a fantastic change. There were 8 different competencies. I was chair of the analysis we had communications, problem solving, analysis, social interaction, all kinds of different competencies. There were 8 of them, and then we had 8 levels, I believe, of each one. And you had to pass from one level to another level to another level with demonstrated competence.
Oh.
And that was a system that was developed in 1970, under the leadership of Sister Joelle Reed, who recently passed away. She was a fabulous woman, and if you ever get a chance to read her full obituary, you'll be amazed.
Cynthia, so how do you determine if someone has demonstrated this competency?
Well, we did things like portfolios. There were, in the sciences, there was, you know, you had to demonstrate you could do certain performance tests. You know, like if you had, if you were doing chemistry, for example, you'd have to do, you know, show you could do a, I don't know anything about chemistry. But
yeah, right. But there would be, in essence, a pass-fail on that then.
Well, with what your guest is saying, a chance to redo it.
Yeah.
You never failed anything. You had feedback, constant feedback, and it was a fabulous system. They even had boards of assessors come in from the community, experts in the area that was being assessed. It was just, if you want to know more about it, you should check out Alverno College.
We will do that. Thank you, Cynthia. I just wanted to get an idea for, you know, for our guest to respond to. So, Ashley, how about that?
Yeah, I mean, there are schools, in Kentucky. It's kind of, and it's kind of a common language now to use what we call standards-based grading, which is a similar concept where you take the standard. In Kentucky, we have Common Core for the moment. And so you take the standard, be it, you know, whatever the skill that you're working on in the classroom may be. And it's a matter of did the students meet the standard or not? And if they didn't, then they have opportunities to redo it. If they did, then that's considered mastery, and they can move on.
Thank you very much, Cynthia. I wonder if Wendy in Pewaukee, our next caller, went to Alverno College. Hi, Wendy.
Hi, good morning. I don't know if you can hear me. I can't figure out how to get my phone off of Bluetooth right now. But if you can, that's great.
Yeah, we can hear you, but be brief because it's a little fuzzy.
Okay. I had a very positive learning experience at Alverno. I attended the Weekend College Program, which allowed me to be able to work full-time and accelerate my learning experience and graduate in 4.5 years. I'm a candidate for success in that program. I went on to own and operate a company, manage millions of dollars, 7 employees through my academic experience at Alverno. And I would highly recommend ability-based learning. It was very structured, although there was no grade. And the accomplishment came through a demonstration of competencies at different levels, depending on the degree program. So there's some formality to it, and there's a lot of learning that I think goes beyond just the academic. I felt I had a lot of personal growth as well. So.
Sounds great, Wendy, and thank you very much for calling in. Very interesting that we have an Alverno College graduate right after the professor. So, Ashley, could something like this be implemented in high school, for example?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah, I definitely think it can, and it is. You know, it is being implemented in different places around the country, and the beauty of that kind of system is that, for example, your caller earlier who said he ended up dropping out of high school, yet he manages, you know, an entire team of people, you know, as a construction worker. I saw a lot of that as well. I mean, over 10 years of teaching, but during that 6 weeks, students who typically would struggle would really thrive in a different, you know, give them something to present, and they are amazing at it. So, but yet then when that doesn't translate necessarily to a test or to a piece of writing. So when you offer students different ways of showing what they can do and what they know, then you see a lot more success in places that maybe you wouldn't. And that's helpful for everyone.
Yeah. The middle school in Chippewa Falls did do away with the traditional system of letter grades. It recently switched to standards-based grading to mark student progress. And you mentioned standard-based grading just a little bit ago. So you would advocate this kind of approach?
Oh, yeah, for sure. And that I taught middle school for 4 years also, and I think it's really refreshing that the lower grades particularly, I think, are more open to those kinds of changes. It's more difficult at the high school level for many reasons, one being, of course, higher ed and the expectations there. But I absolutely advocate for those types of changes. But really, you know, one thing I would caution is for a school not to just say, oh, wow, here's this standards-based grading thing, and it seems to work in that school down the block. But to really think about, you know, what's going on in the building, what the student needs are, because it may not be standards-based grading. It may be a completely new way of thinking about assessment and evaluation. And so I would just encourage, you know, when schools adopt that, to really adopt it intentionally with a focus on student learning.
Well, we will leave it there for now. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Ashley Lamb Sinclair, high school instructional coach, founder and CEO of Curio Learning. She was the Kentucky Teacher of the Year in 2016. I meant to ask her a little bit about that, but we ran out of time. Talking with us about her experiment in the past school year where they did not give students grades for a six-week period. She thought it was a better way to go. And we thank producer Nyasia Ellison, and thank you for listening. I hope you stay tuned. There's much more to come. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.